voice was steel edged in ice. Dearborn took the bait.
What's that supposed to mean?
Your daughter didn't kill Malcolm Fade, said Julian. Annabelle did. Zara popped to her feet like a puppet jerked upward on strings.
That's a lie,
she shrieked.
"'Tis not a lie, said Annabelle. Malcolm raised me from the dead. He used the blood of Arthur Blackthorne to do it. And for that, and for his torture and abandonment of me, I killed him.
Now the room exploded. Shouts echoed off the walls. Samantha and Dane Larkspear were on their feet, shaking their fists. Horace Dearborn was roaring that Annabelle was a liar, that all Blackthorns were.
Enough, shouted Gia. Silence! La spada mortale.
A small olive-skinned woman rose from a place near the back. She wore a plain dress, but her thick necklace sparkled with jewels. Her hair was a deep gray, worn nearly to her hips, and her voice carried enough authority to cut through the noise in the room.
What did you say, Chiara?
Gia demanded. Emma knew her name. Chiara Malatesta, head of the Rome Institute in Italy.
The mortal sword, said Chiara. If there is a question of whether this person, if that's what she can be called, is telling the truth, ply her with Malaturk. Then we can dispense with pointless arguments about whether she's lying.
No. Annabelle's eyes darted around the room in a panic. Not the sword.
See, she's lying, said Dane Larkspear. She fears the sword will reveal the truth.
She fears the sword because she was tortured by the council, Julian said. He started toward the dais, but two of the council guards seized him, holding him back. Emma started to rise, but Helen pressed her firmly back into her seat.
Not yet, Helen whispered. It will make things worse. She has to at least try.
But Emma's heart was racing. Julian was still being restrained from approaching the dais. Every nerve in her body was shrieking as Robert Lightwood moved away and returned, carrying something long and sharp and silver. Something that gleamed like dark water. She saw, she felt, Julian inhale sharply. He had held the mortal sword himself before and knew the pain it caused.
Don't do this,
he said, but his voice was drowned in a swell of other voices. A clamor in the room as various shadow hunters rose to their feet, craning for a glimpse of what was going on.
She's a filthy, undead creature, Zara shouted. She should be put out of her misery, not standing up in front of the council.
Annabelle blanched. Emma could feel Julian's tension, knew what he was thinking. If Magnus were here, Magnus could explain. Annabelle was not a revenant. She had been brought back to life. She was a living shadow hunter. Magnus was a downworlder that the Clave trusted, one of a few. None of this would be happening if he'd been able to join the meeting.
Magnus, Emma thought. Oh, Magnus, I hope you're all right. I wish you could be with us.
The sword will determine Annabelle's fitness to give testimony, Gia said in a hard voice that carried to the back of the room. That is the law. Stand back and let the mortal sword work.
The crowd fell silent. The mortal instruments were the highest power the Shadow Hunters knew outside the angel himself. Even Zara closed her mouth. Take your time, Robert said to Annabelle. The compassion in his face surprised Emma. She remembered him forcing the blade into Julian's hands, and Julian had been only 12. She had been angry with Robert for a long time after that, though Julian didn't appear to bear a grudge. Annabelle was panting like a frightened rabbit. She looked at Julian, who gave her an encouraging nod, and reached her hands out slowly. When she took the sword, a shudder went through her body, as if she'd touched an electric fence. Her face tensed, but she held the sword unharmed. Gia exhaled with visible relief. The sword had proved it. Annabelle was a shadow hunter. The hall remained silent, as everyone stared. Both the consul and the inquisitor stepped back, giving Annabelle space. She stood in the center of the dais, a lonely figure in an ill-fitting dress.
What is your name?
Robert asked her, his tone deceptively mild.
Annabelle, Callisto Blackthorn,
she spoke between quick breaths. And who are you standing on this dais with? Her blue-green eyes darted desperately between them.
I don't know you, she breathed. You are consul and inquisitor, but not the ones I knew. You are clearly a Lightwood, but...
She shook her head before her face brightened.
Robert, she said. Julian called you Robert.
Samantha Larkspear laughed derisively, and several other placard-bearers joined her.
There isn't enough left in her brain to give decent evidence.
Be silent, thundered Gia.
Miss Blackthorn, you knew. You were the lover of Malcolm Fade, High Warlock of Los Angeles.
He was only a warlock when I knew him, of no rank, Annabelle's voice shook. Please, ask me if I killed him. I can't stand much more of this.
What we discuss here is not your choice. Gia didn't seem angry, but Annabelle visibly flinched.
This is a mistake, Livy whispered to Emma. They need to just ask her about Malcolm and end this. They can't make this into an interrogation.
It'll be fine, Emma said. It will. But her heart was racing. The other Blackthorns were watching with visible tension. On her other side, Emma could see Helen, gripping the arms of her seat. Aline was rubbing her shoulder. Ask her, Julian said. Just ask her, Gia.
Julian, enough,
Gia said, but she turned to Annabelle, her dark eyes expectant.
Annabelle Callisto Blackthorn, did you kill Malcolm Fade?
Yes.
Hate crystallized Annabelle's voice, strengthening it.
I cut him open. I watched him bleed to death. Zara Dearborn did nothing. She has been lying to you all.
A gasp ran around the room. For a moment, Julian relaxed, and the guards who'd been holding him released their grip. Zara, red-faced, gaped from the crowd.
Thank the angel, Emma thought. They'll have to listen now.
Annabelle faced the room, the sword in her hand, and for that moment, Emma could see what Malcolm must have fallen in love with. She looked proud, delighted, beautiful. Something sailed past her head and smashed into the lectern. A bottle, Emma thought. Glass shattered outward from it. There was a gasp and then a giggle, and then other objects began flying through the air. The crowd seemed to be flinging whatever they had in hand. Not the whole crowd, Emma realized. It was the cohort and their supporters. There weren't that many of them, but there were enough, and their hate was bigger than the whole room. Emma met Julian's eyes. She saw the despair in his. They had expected better. Even after everything they'd been through, they'd expected better, somehow. It was true that many shadow hunters were now on their feet shouting at the cohort to stop, but Annabelle had crumpled to her knees, her head down, her hands still gripping the sword. She hadn't raised her hands to shield herself from the objects flying at her. They'd smacked into the floor and the lectern in the window. Bottles and bags, coins and stones, even watches and bracelets.
Stop!
Julian shouted, and the cold rage with which he spoke was enough to shock at least a few into silence.
By the angel, this is the truth. She is telling you the truth. About Malcolm, about the Unseelie King. How are we supposed to know that? Hissed Dearborn. Who says the mortal sword works on that thing? She is tainted.
She is a monster, shouted Zara. This is a conspiracy to drag us into war with the Unseelie Court. The Blackthorns care about nothing but their lies and their filthy fairy siblings.
Julian,
Annabelle gasped. The mortal sword held so tightly in her hands that blood began to bloom on her skin where she gripped the blade.
Julian, help me. Magnus, where's Magnus?
Julian struggled against the guard's hold. Robert hurried forward, his big hands outstretched. Enough, he said. Come with me, Annabelle.
Leave me alone.
With a hoarse shout, Annabelle flinched back from him, raising the blade in her hand. Emma was reminded suddenly and coldly of two things. The mortal sword was not just an instrument of justice. It was a weapon. And Annabelle was a shadow hunter with a weapon in her hand. As if he couldn't believe what was happening, Robert took another step toward Annabelle, reaching out for her, as if he could calm her, convince her. He opened his mouth to speak, and she thrust the blade up between them. It pierced through Robert Lightwood's robes and sliced into his chest. Kit felt like someone who'd wandered into another family's hospital room by mistake and wasn't allowed to leave. Alex sat by Magnus's side, occasionally touching his shoulder or saying something in a low voice. Kieran stared out the window as if he could transport himself through the glass.
Should someone tell the kids? Max and Rafe? Kit said finally.
Alex stood up and crossed the room, where a carafe of water rested on a side table. He poured himself a glass.
Not right now, he said. They're safe in the city with my mother. They don't need... Magnus doesn't need...
He took a drink of water.
I was hoping he'd get better and we wouldn't have to tell them anything. You said you knew what was wrong with him, said Kit. Is it dangerous?
I don't know, Alex said. But I do know one thing. It isn't just him. It's other warlocks, too. Tessa and Jem have been looking for a cause or cure, but she's sick, too. He broke off. A dull roar was audible, a sound like waves rising, about to crash. Alec blanched.
I've heard that sound before, he said. Something's happening. In the hall.
Kieran was off the windowsill in a fluid single motion. It's his death.
It might not be, said Kit, straining his ears. I can smell blood, Kieran said, and hear screams.
He climbed up on the windowsill and jerked down one of the curtains. He seized up the curtain rod, which had a sharply pointed finial, and leapt to the floor, brandishing it like a spear. His silver-black eyes gleamed.
I will not be found weaponless when they come.
You should stay here, both of you. I'll find out what's going on, Alex said.
My father...
The door flew open. Kieran flung his curtain rod. Diego, who had just appeared in the doorway, ducked as it flew by and slammed into the wall, where it jammed point first.
Gachingados, said Diego, looking stunned. What the hell?
He thinks you're here to kill us, said Kit.
Are you?
Diego rolled his eyes.
Things have gone bad in the hall, he said.
Has anyone been injured? Alec asked.
Diego hesitated.
Your father, he began. Alec set his glass down and walked across the room to Magnus. He bent and kissed him on the forehead and the cheek. Magnus didn't move, only slept on peacefully, his cat eyes closed. Kit envied him.
Stay here, Alec said to Kit and Kieran. Then he turned and walked out of the room.
Diego looked after him grimly. Kit felt a little sick. He had a feeling that whatever had happened to Alec's father, it hadn't been minor. Kieran yanked his curtain rod out of the wall and pointed it at Diego.
You have delivered your message, he said. Now go. I will protect the boy and the warlock.
Diego shook his head.
I'm here to get you, he pointed at Kieran, and take you to the Scholomance.
I will not go anywhere with you, said Kieran. You have no morality. You brought dishonor upon Lady Christina.
You have no idea what happened between me and Christina, added Diego in a frozen voice.
Kit noticed that perfect Diego was looking a little less than perfect. The shadows under his eyes were deep and violet, and his brown skin was sallow. Exhaustion and tension drew his fine features tight.
Say what you will of fairies, Kieran said. We have no greater scorn than that we hold toward those who betray a heart given into their keeping.
It was Christina, said Diego, who asked me to come here and bring you to the Scholomance. If you refuse, you will be dishonoring her wishes.
Kieran scowled.
You are lying.
I am not, said Diego.
She feared for your safety. The cohort's hatred is at a fever pitch, and the hall runs wild. You will be safe if you come with me, but I can promise nothing otherwise.
How would I be safe at the Scholomance with Zara Dearborn and her friends?
She won't be there, said Diego. She and Samantha and Manuel plan to remain here, in Idris, at the heart of power. Power is all they have ever wanted. The Scholomance is a place of peaceful study.
He held his hand out. Come with me.
For Christina.
Kit stared, his breath caught. It was a very strange moment. He had learned enough about shadow hunters now to understand what it meant that Diego was a Centaurian, and what laws he was breaking, offering to smuggle Kieran to the Skolomance. And he understood enough of the pride of the fair folk to know what Kieran was accepting if he agreed. There was another roar of noise outside. "If you're here," Kit said cautiously, "and the cohort attacks you, Mark and Christina will want to protect you, and they could get hurt doing it." Kieran set the curtain rod down on the floor. He looked at Kit. "Tell Mark where I've gone," he said, "and give Christina my thanks." Kit nodded. Diego inclined his head before stepping forward and taking Kieran awkwardly by the arm. He pressed the fingers of his other hand against the Primi Ordine pin on his gear. Before Kit could speak, Diego and Kieran vanished, a swirl of bright light streaking across the air where they had stood. The guards surged forward as Gia reached to catch Robert's slumping body. Her face was a mask of horror. Gia sank to her knees, reaching for her steely, carving an Irazi onto Robert's limp, dangling arm. His blood spread out around them both, a sluggishly moving pool of scarlet. "Annabelle!" Julian's voice was barely a whisper of bone-deep shock. Emma could almost see the abyss of guilt and self-blame opening at his feet. He began to struggle frantically against the grip of the guards holding him. "Let me go. Let me go."
"Stay back," Gia screamed. "All of you, stay back."
She was kneeling beside Robert, her hands wet with his blood as she tried again and again to cut a healing rune into his skin. Two other guards pounded up the steps and halted uncertainly at her words. Annabelle, her blue dress splashed with blood, held the sword in front of her like a barrier. Robert's blood was already sinking into the blade, as if it were porous stone drinking up water. Julian tore free of his restraints and leapt up onto the bloody dais. Emma shot to her feet, Christina seizing the back of her shirt, but to no avail. She was already clambering onto the narrow back of the bench. Thank the angel for all the hours she'd spent practicing on the rafters in the training room, she thought, and ran, leaping from the end of the bench, into the aisle. There were voices shouting at her, to her, a roar like waves. She ignored them. Julian rose slowly to his feet, facing Annabelle.
"Stay away!"
Annabelle shrieked, waving the mortal sword. It seemed to be glowing, pulsing even, in her grip. Or was that Emma's imagination?
"Stay away from me!"
"Annabelle, stop." Julian spoke calmly, his hands up to show they were empty. Empty. Emma fumed. Where was his sword? Where were his weapons? His eyes wide and guileless. "This will only make things worse." Annabelle was sobbing harsh breaths.
"Liar! Get back! Get away from me!"
"I never lied to you."
"You told me they would give me Blackthorn Manor. You told me Magnus would protect me. But look!"
She swept her arm in a wide arc, indicating the whole room.
"I am tainted to them, despised, a criminal."
"You can still come back." Julian's voice was a marvel of steadiness. "Put the sword down." For a moment, Annabelle seemed to hesitate. Emma was at the foot of the dais steps. She saw Annabelle's grip loosen on the hilt of the sword. Gia stood up. Her robes were wet with Robert's blood, her steely, limp in her hand.
"He's dead,"
she said. It was like a key turning the lock of a cage, freeing the occupants. The guards lunged up the steps, leaping toward Annabelle, blades outstretched. She spun with inhuman quickness, striking at them, and the sword slashed across both their chests. There were screams as they collapsed, and Emma was running up the stairs, drawing Cortana, leaping in front of Julian. From here, she could see all of the council hall. It was a melee. Some were fleeing through the doors. The Blackthorns and Christina were on their feet, fighting toward the dais, though a line of guards had appeared to hold them back. As Emma watched, Livy ducked under a guard's arm and began to shove her way towards them. A longsword glimmered in her hand. Emma looked back at Annabelle. It was clear this near to her that something had snapped inside her. She looked blank, her eyes dead and disconnected. Her gaze shifted past Emma. Alec had burst through the doors. He stared up at the dais, his face a mask of grief and shock. Emma wrenched her eyes away from him as Annabelle sprang for Julian like a cat, her sword cutting the air before her. Instead of raising Cortana to meet Annabelle's thrust, Emma threw herself to the side, knocking Julian to the polished floor of the dais. For a moment, he was against her. They were together, body to body, and she felt the parabatized strength flow through her. The mortal sword came down again, and they sprang apart, redoubled in strength, as it sliced through the wood at their feet. The room was full of screaming. Emma thought she heard Alec call for Robert.
Dad? Please, Dad!
She thought of the tapestry of him in Robert's room. She thought of Isabel. She whirled with Cortana in her hand, and the flat of the blade slammed against Melotok. Both swords shuddered. Annabelle jerked her sword back, her eyes suddenly almost feral. Someone was shouting for Julian. It was Livy, clambering up the side of the dais.
Livy!
Julian yelled.
Livy, get out of here!
Annabelle swung again, and Emma raised Cortana, cutting on the upstroke, pushing closer, slamming her sword against Annabelle's with all the force in her body, bringing the blades together with a massive, echoing clang. And the mortal sword shattered. It cracked jaggedly along the blade, the top half shearing away. Annabelle shrieked and stumbled backward, and black fluid spilled from the broken sword like sap from a felled tree. Emma collapsed to her knees. It was as if the hand that held Cortana had been struck by lightning. Her wrist was humming, and a ringing sounded all the way up to her bones, making her body shake. She grabbed for Cortana's hilt with her right hand, panicking, desperate not to drop it.
Emma?
Julian was holding his own arm stiffly, Emma saw, as if he'd been hurt too. The humming was receding. Emma tried to get to her feet and stumbled. Her teeth bit down into her lip with frustration. How dare her body betray her?
I'm fine. Fine.
Livy gasped at the sight of the smashed mortal sword. She had reached the top of the dais, Julian reaching out, and Livy tossed him the sword she was holding. He caught it neatly and spun to face Annabelle, who was staring down at the broken weapon in her hand. The consul had seen what had happened too, and was striding toward them.
It's over, Annabelle, Julian said. He didn't look triumphant, he looked weary.
It's done.
Annabelle gave a growl low in her throat and lunged. Julian raised his blade, but Annabelle whipped past him, her black hair seeming to soar around her. Her feet left the ground, and for a moment she was truly beautiful, a shadow hunter in full, flowering glory, just before she landed lightly on the wooden floor at the dais's edge and drove her jagged, broken half-blade into Livy's heart. Livy's eyes shot wide. Her mouth formed an, oh, as if she were astonished by discovering something small and surprising, like a mouse on the kitchen counter, an overturned vase of flowers, a broken wristwatch. Nothing huge, nothing terrible. Annabelle stepped back, breathing hard. She no longer looked beautiful. Her dress, her arm, was soaked in red and black. Livy raised her hand and wonderingly touched the hilt protruding from her chest. Her cheeks flared red.
Ty,
she whispered.
Ty,
Her knees went out from under her. She thudded hard to the ground on her back. The blade was like an ugly massive insect fastened to her chest, a metal mosquito sucking the blood that ran from her wound, red mixed with black of the sword spilling across the floor. In the aisle of the council hall, Ty looked up, his face turning the color of ashes. Emma had no idea if he could see them through the teeming crowd, see his sister, see what had happened. But his hands flew to his chest, pressing over his heart. He pitched to his knees, soundlessly, just as Livy had, and crumpled to the ground. Julian made a noise. It was a noise Emma couldn't have described, not as human a sound as a howl or a scream. It sounded like it was ripped out of the inside of him, like something brutal was tearing through his chest. He dropped the longsword Livy had risked so much to bring him, fell to his knees, and crawled to her, pulling her into his lap.
Livy, Livy, my Livy,
he whispered, cradling her, feverishly stroking her blood-wet hair away from her face. There was so much blood,
He was covered in it in seconds. It had soaked through Livy's clothes. Even her shoes were drenched in it.
Livy,
His hands shook. He fumbled at his steely, put it to her arm. The healing rune vanished as quickly as he drew it. Emma felt as if someone had punched her in the stomach. There were wounds that were beyond an Irazi's power. Healing runes only vanished from skin when occult poison was involved or when the person was already dead.
Livia!
Julian's voice rose, cracking and tumbling over itself like a wave breaking far out at sea.
Livy, my baby, please, sweetheart, open your eyes. It's Jules. I'm here for you. I'm always here for you. Please. Please.
Blackness exploded behind Emma's eyes. The pain in her arm was gone. She felt nothing at all but rage. Rage that bleached everything else out of the world except the sight of Annabelle cringing against the lectern, staring at Julian cradling his sister's dead body at what she'd done. Emma whirled and stalked toward Annabelle. There was nowhere she could go. The guards had circled the dais. The rest of the room was a seething mass of confusion. Emma hoped Ty was unconscious. She hoped he was seeing none of this. He would wake up eventually, and the horror of what he would wake up to drove her forward. Annabelle staggered back. Her foot slipped, and she tumbled to the floor. She raised her hand as Emma loomed up over her. Her face was a mask of fear. Emma heard Arthur's voice in her head. Mercy is better than revenge. But it was fainter than Julian's whispers or Drew's sobs. She brought Cortana down, scything the blade through the air. But as it sliced the air, inky smoke erupted from the window behind Annabelle. It had the force of an explosion, a concussive wave knocking Emma backward. As she stumbled to her knees, she caught sight of a moving shape inside the smoke. The gleam of gold, the flash of a symbol burned into her brain. A crown, broken in half. The smoke vanished, and Annabelle vanished with it. Emma curled her body over Cortana, clutching the blade to herself. Her soul corroded with despair. All around her, she could hear the rising voices in the room, cries and shrieks. She could see Mark bent over Ty, who was crumpled on the floor. Mark's shoulders were shaking. Helen was struggling through the crowd toward both of them. Drew was on the ground, sobbing into her hands. Alec had slumped back against the doors of the hall, staring at the devastation. And there, in front of her, was Julian. His eyes and ears closed to anything but Livy, her body cradled against his. She seemed adrift of fragile ash or snow, something impermanent that had blown into his arms accidentally. The petal of a fairy flower, the white feather of an angel's wing, the dream of a little girl, the memory of a sister reaching up her arms.
Julian? Julian, carry me.
But the soul, the spirit that made her Livy, was no longer there. It was something that had gone away to a far and untouchable place. Even as Julian ran his hands over her hair again and again, and begged her to wake up and look at him just one more time. High above the council hall, the golden clock began to chime the hour.
Lord of Shadows, The Dark Artifices, Book 2, was written by Cassandra Clare and read by James Marsters. It was recorded by Brianna Villarreal at North Hollywood Sound in California. Editing and post-production by Frog Pond Productions. Terry Hogan was the mix engineer. The associate producer was Tiffany Ferrari. Lord of Shadows was produced and directed by Christina Zarafanidis. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Lord of Shadows, The Dark Artifices, Book 2, is available in print from Margaret K. McElderry Books. Also from Simon & Schuster Audio, Lady Midnight, The Dark Artifices, Book 1, by Cassandra Clare, read by Mirena Baccarin, and Clockwork Angel, The Infernal Devices Series, Number 1, by Cassandra Clare, read by Jennifer Ely.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.